Hello, homemakers. Welcome to the Art of Home podcast, where we are exploring how homemakers cultivate a place to belong. I'm your host, Allison Weeks. I am a wife, a mom to four grown kids, and a granny to two, and I've been practicing the art of home for over 30 years. Welcome to all of our regular listeners, and welcome if you are new to the Art of Home. I'm so glad that you have found us. I have a great seasoned homemaker portrait for you today, and since I was out of town for really the mostly better part of last week, I am going to skip Allison's update today, and I'm going to get right into the interview. I will be back at the end to share a few reminders and podcast updates, but for now, I want to introduce you to today's guest, Jan Roche. Married for over 40 years, Jan and her husband have raised 10 children, homeschooling them for many of those years. And that's a topic that comes up a good bit in our conversation. When Jan and her husband Brett married, they were both new Christians. So not only were they learning how to live together and create a harmonious home life, they were both learning how to faithfully walk with Christ, and it wasn't always easy. We discussed some of the practical needs for structure when living in a large family, and Jan shares a little bit about her current season of homemaking, which involves caring for her husband as he battles Parkinson's disease. Jan shares many tips, a lot of practical advice, and much wisdom throughout our conversation. I especially love that her advice is centered on the need to cultivate a deep, abiding relationship with the Lord. Thank you for trusting me with some of your time today. Whatever you are applying your hands to as you listen, I know you will enjoy Jan's story of home. Welcome to The Art of Home. I'm here with Jan Roche, and Jan is a seasoned homemaker, and she was nominated to be on the podcast by her daughter, Abigail. I'm excited to hear her story of what all that God has done in her family and through her homemaking over the years. But before we go back and hear the beginning of that story, Jan, why don't you say hi to everybody and just tell us a little bit about who you are today?
Hello, my name is Jan, and my husband Brett and I just celebrated our 41st wedding anniversary on February 6th. We have 10 beautiful children, 5 boys and 5 girls, and 8 wonderful grandchildren so far. Our oldest daughter, Sarah, just turned 40, and our youngest, Eric, will be 22 in June. So we got a good span there. We homeschooled for about 20 years, and the first 5 children graduated from that, and then we started going to a larger church that had a Christian school, and the last 5 graduated from here. I started helping in the school and did that for 2 years, and then actually taught at the school, first and second grade, a combined class for 8 years. My husband's health declined about that time, and so he had to retire early, and so I quit teaching then. And after we got settled into that and he was okay and we kind of got a routine going, I began cleaning houses a couple days a week, and that's what I'm still doing now, and even did that today. So that's kind of where we are now.
So I'm hoping too that maybe since you clean houses now, you might have some good cleaning hacks and tips for us when we get to that portion of the podcast. I'm excited to hear about that. Well, okay, so let's go back to the beginning of your story, Jan, and why don't you tell us, when did you first become a homemaker, and did you bring any skills with you into that role?
Okay, I first became a homemaker when we got married in February. That was 1983. My husband and I, were both young Christians. He was older than me. He was 29. I was 22, but we had both only been saved about 2 years. And so kind of a difficulty there. The church where my husband was going and my brother was going there, had been praying for Brett to find a wife. So when I graduated from college, I started going to that church, and the people there thought that I was the answer to their prayers, and they really encouraged us to date. And so we did. We started dating. We got to know each other better. 2 months later, he proposed, and then about 3 months later, we got married, which was really, really quick. And I mean, he was 29, so he was older.
He was ready.
He was ready, yes. I don't necessarily recommend doing it that way because, you know, I feel like we had a lot of getting to know each other that we needed to do a lot more of, and also, you know, a lot more discussing of things that we needed to do to kind of, you know, make sure we were on the same page. We also were taught, I mean, this is the beginning of like the homeschool movement, you know, the early 80s and all. And I don't know that everybody was taught this, but we were taught in our church that part of that homeschool, you know, philosophy mentality was to let God determine how many children you have. And so before we got married, we decided to, you know, that's what we were going to do. We were just going to let God decide. My pastor and his wife had only had two children, following that. And so we thought, as a young Christian, I know it was very naive, I guess, but as a young Christian, that was very exciting. Let's just let God, you know, have control. Now, my mom was the youngest of 11 children. So we do have,
yeah,
fertilities in our genes, I guess. And, yeah. Uh-huh. Big yeah. family. And so God did bless us in that way. But you know, I have to say that God has just been with us all through the way. I mean, there's just so many little things that happen along the way where we could just see God was just providing for us because, you know, we would need something. And he had an aunt, and she had a big farm in Alabama, and she didn't have any children. So she started, as you know, she was getting older, they started, you know, they sold the farm and they started giving out the inheritance early. And it would just come at just the right time when we needed something. So it was just amazing to see how God provided for us during all that time, because I didn't work the whole time. As I said, I didn't grow up in a Christian home, and my husband didn't either. His dad was in the military. So his mom, you know, pretty much raised them, a lot by herself. My mom, was, you know, stay-at-home mom. She did all the cooking and cleaning for us. You know, we had to clean our room, but I didn't really, learned too much until I got maybe in my teen years. My sister and I started baking some for different activities and things. And my mom would, when she went, she finally did go to work. And when she did, she would leave us chore list, you know, things to do. And I remember one time, you know, I was supposed to clean the bathroom, and I cleaned it, and she got home, and I was kind of proud of it. You know, I thought I did a good job. And she walked in, she's like, "Did you clean this bathroom? It doesn't look like you touched it," you know. And we still laugh about that tonight. She just gets, "Oh, I'm so sorry I did that." But and it kind of hurt my feelings then, but it kind of really inspired me to, okay, I need to do my best. Now, I don't remember her actually teaching us, you know, how she wanted things cleaned. But one thing, you know, about my mom is that she kept a clean house. You know, there were six of us, but she wanted her house to be clean. And so even though she may not have taken the time to show me how to do things, she still gave me that example of a clean house. And it just inspired me, you know, to have a clean house. I was just used to that, you know. She tried to keep things as organized as she could. She was a very basic cook, but, you know, always had good meals. And the only thing I remember learning how to cook as a meal was like, you know, the box of Chef Boyardee pizza. I don't know if you remember that.
Yes.
And then we made French bread pizza sometimes, you know. Yes. That was like the limit of my dinner meals.
Chef Boyardee pizza. That brings back memories.
Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. We did it. My mom would make it on the cookie sheet.
Right,
so,
right.
And so it would be a big rectangle pizza.
Right.
With the sauce and everything. Oh yeah.
I don't think they have those anymore. It's probably good, but I remember learning how to make biscuits. I remember doing that. I had gone to school in North Carolina, so that was kind of a big thing, you know, was making biscuits, you know. And so I was real proud because Brett had come over for breakfast. He would pick me up to go to church and before we got married, and I remember I had made some biscuits, and they actually had risen. I don't know what I did back then, but they looked a lot better than the ones I do now. But anyway, so just a little bit of cooking and baking, and when we first got married, and a little bit of sewing, just because I had home ec in middle school, And they taught us cooking there too. I don't know if they still have home ec, but that was really invaluable because, you know, we made little, I remember making like a little smock and little apron. I mean, you know, we made some things and it did teach me at least the basics of sewing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what would you say was the toughest thing for you to learn? Where did you have the steepest learning curve and how did you work to grow in that area of homemaking?
Probably, I would say, learning how to, you know, not knowing how, you know, so much about cooking. And I was home for about a month or two after we got married. And there was this couple in our, there's a couple in our church that were in the Navy, and he had been deployed to Spain and she wanted to go with them. And so she asked if we would stay in their house. And so we did that. I can't remember exactly how long, but she had all these recipe books in her house. So that was a great, you know, that was a great help. Cause I think I maybe had the Betty Crocker cookbook. That was like the, you know, all I had gotten for my wedding. So I did have that. But she had all those cookbooks. And so that was a big help to me just to come up with things to cook. You know, I knew what my mom cooked and I had been away at school too. So I really didn't have a great memory of everything that she cooked. I remember some of her meals. So that was a big help. But after about a month or so, I started teaching at this little school that we had at our small church. And so then, you know, I had to make breakfast for us and then fix our lunches to take to school. And then also, you know what I was going to cook for dinner. So that was very hard. That was hard to get used to, hard to keep coming up with things to cook because I think that's one of the hardest things is just coming up with something to cook every night. You know, I mean, sometimes the husband is just like, I don't care what we eat, you know, but it's important to the wife, you know, you want to make something that they like, especially when you first get married. So that was pretty rough, was just, you know, keeping up with all the cooking. We had our first daughter, she was born a week before our first anniversary. And, after I got saved, it's like the Lord put in my heart a love for children. And one summer I had worked at a nursery in our small town there. And I never realized how much I just loved babies. And, it just really came out of me, you know, working in that nursery. And then, you know, I got saved and I was excited about having a child. By this time we had our own little, we rented a little, mobile home and I know the rent wasn't very much, but back then, see, you could afford to have children because the rent was like, what, $200 a month? I mean, for this little place and, it didn't have a washer or dryer. I mean, it was pretty small. It wasn't the, grand place to live, but it was sufficient and, we made do. And, so we had our first child. And so just learning how to balance all that and keeping up with my time and having my priorities, that was hard. I'm kind of I have a weird mix. I'm indecisive, but then I'm also a perfectionist. And then I'm also procrastinate because I want everything to be just right. So then I'm indecisive. I don't know what I should do. So that's not a good combination to have. But I would, you know, and I get easily distracted, you know, because I'm not sure what I want to do. So I'll just, let me go do this over here while I'm, you know. So fortunately, I had so much to do. It would just keep me on track because, you know, I didn't have a lot of time to play around with it. So it had to be done. I work well under pressure, I think. But then I think too was just, you know, with Brett and I not really dating that long, you know, we had some communication problems and I was trying to be, you know, the superwoman, you know, I don't know if you've talked about that before, you know, I was trying to, you know, I thought it was my job to do everything. And he had kind of grown up, you know, his dad wasn't even home a lot. So he kind of had that idea too, that the wife does everything. So I was taking care of my daughter mostly, you know, I nursed and all that. So that was, you know, pretty much took care of that. We got a little puppy at this. So just a lot going on there. And, you know, I would get frustrated and I would, you know, kind of maybe, you know, blow up a little bit and talk to Brett, tell him what was going on. He would try to help, you know, but it was very easy to kind of slip back into that same thing where I was doing most of it. And in some ways, it was like a challenge to me, but it really wasn't good. I mean, you look back and you just wish you could have done things differently, but I was just the way it was. It was the way, I was brought up too. I mean, that generation, of my parents, they all stayed at home. And it was almost like this was a transition time. We were kind of like in that middle ground where our parents stayed home, but then, like my children, they're used to the wife having to work and all that. And they've worked through some of those issues, but we were kind of stuck in the middle there. And we were the ones that were still staying at home, doing a lot of things, but then we were also more involved with, whether teaching or whatever, we're just more involved in other things too. So having to learn how to balance that was,
would you say that the expectation, so I'm going to shift into expectations because that's kind of what we're talking about right now.
Right.
Is that you had these expectations maybe of how it was going to look, and it really didn't look the way you thought, right?
Exactly. and plus not, I didn't grow up in a Christian home. So
you had no point of reference.
I had no point of reference. So, when we got saved and we started this family, I just thought, okay, everything's just going to work out so smoothly because God's just going to bless every little thing we do. And God does. God does bless and He does help. Sometimes we have to work through the things too. And sometimes, He just teaches. He's always teaching us. He's always showing us things and helping us improve and showing us how much we need Him. Because sometimes we think we got this, okay, I can, and that's when everything will, fall apart too. And you have to pick up the pieces. But so just learning how to depend on the Lord and, not having that example and, learning how to pray and learning how to really pray about specific things and not just having this general, Lord, bless my day and bless everybody, really praying specifically and just seeing how God will work and He will always come through if we just ask Him. But it was, I think part of it too was a little bit of, my own, like a pride or just, wanting to do, feeling like I had to do things myself. Sometimes I would feel like, well, this is my own fault that this has happened. So I just need to, God even takes our mistakes. And I've had, I've learned this, God will even take, even when we fail and we've messed up, we can always go to God and still say, Lord, I have messed up. I've wasted my time. I didn't get this done. Please help me. Please help me to get this. And God has always come through and He is so gracious and merciful. It is just, so you're just learning a lot about God. And, my husband too, he didn't have really he didn't have a good Christian upbringing either. His was probably less than even mine because my mom at least took us to church. We just never had my dad, he didn't get saved till he was probably 50 something years old. And that's just another story. But, anyway,
you're not just learning homemaking, you're learning what it means to follow Christ at the same time. We're all learning that our entire lives. That is a lesson we keep learning over and over and over again, how to follow Jesus. But it was very new to you. Like it was at this point. So you're coming into marriage as a new Christian and your husband is a new Christian.
Right.
And so, that's,
Then, I felt like it was God's will for us to have as many children as He gave us. So I felt like, okay, if it's God's will, then He's going to give me the grace to do it. It was just, it was kind of hard working through the details of it, and just feeling like, okay, well, I don't know how this is going to work. But anyway, I mean, it all worked together. And our kids all survived.
Well, what are some practical, everybody lived, right? Okay. What are some practical ways that you managed your household of 10 children? And, what are some practical things that you did?
We were very scheduled, I would have to say. We had a lot to do, and with teaching that many children, and this was another thing that even added to my load was that we were taught homeschooling through our church, and the method that he encouraged us to do was called the principal approach. And you probably never heard of it, but it was a very, very biblically based curriculum. So it wasn't like a set curriculum that you could just buy. You had to work a lot of this through yourself. And you would use the Webster's 1828 dictionary. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but he is a very Bible-based dictionary, you know, the first American dictionary, but he was a saved man and just used verses all through his definitions and all that amazing dictionary. Mm-hmm. You would take the
You can get it online. Yeah.
Yeah, still, it's very good. It's worth having because you can define Bible words and all that. But so you would take the subject that you were going to be teaching and you would define it, and then you would underline the keywords, define those, and try to get the vocabulary of the subject. And then you would go to the concordance and you would look up the verses that would have to do with those things, see what the Bible said about that subject. And you would look for the origin, you know, when did this subject begin? When did it, you know, what was its purpose? Why did God want us to study this? Like in science, if you look at Genesis 1, you've got the basic sciences in Genesis 1, and God created light, which is physics, and then he created the firmament, which is meteorology, and then, you know, you had botany and astronomy and zoology, and then anatomy and physiology, and, you know, a lot of your sciences are all in Genesis 1, so that would be like the beginning. See, God wants us to study those things because he put that in the Bible. And you look at the history of the subject and see how God blessed it through, you know, how many discoveries were made after the Bible came out. And you could just see how all the sciences just blossomed, you know, after the Bible got into the hands of people. And so it was a fascinating study. And I learned a lot. I really learned my Bible because I didn't feel like I knew it, you know, very well and was just learning it. Our preacher did preach the Bible well. But it, you know, I did learn my Bible really well. It was just hard to take it practically and get it into a curriculum. And, you know, as you start having, you know, more children, they taught you how to, like, we would all be studying. This is just when I, you know, maybe had maybe four when they were in elementary school. You would study the same thing. It's just that each child would get a little bit more about that same thing. So it was a way that I could teach them all at the same time. And each one would be getting just, you know, a little bit different, a little bit more, yeah. But it was all kind of the center around the same thing. But well, it was a very, helpful. Very,
it sounds intense. Like it sounds like it was a lot of work.
It was a lot of work
to
really
gather
was.
All that together and make that work. So you're doing this intense work, getting the curriculum and whatnot. How's the household running? How are you making sure that the groceries get bought and the meals get planned and all that kind of stuff?
Looking back, it's like, how in the world? I don't even know. I don't know how we did everything, you know, because, it was very intensive work. I mean, so I don't know. I had a schedule. I still have some of my schedules of, you know, I look back and I'm like, oh my goodness. But we had a set time, you know, they would get up at a certain time. I mean, this is as they're getting older, you know, they would get up at a certain time. They would read their Bibles individually. And then we'd come out, we'd have breakfast. And I had a meal plan for breakfast. We had a schedule for what we were having for breakfast each time. And then, we would have a Bible time together in the morning and we would read together, especially Proverbs. We just spent a lot of time in Proverbs, and then we would memorize scripture. I can't remember if we sang in the morning. I can't remember, but I know we would have a Bible time at night. Also, my husband would do a Bible time and we would sing songs and, you know, sing the hymns and all that. And then we would do school and we would try to start on time as best we could. You know, I always have a new baby. We'd have somebody, you know, I'd have to take a break and go nurse the baby or whatever. But, they just had their work set out for them and they had to get on their work. I felt like that was the only way I could make sure they got everything done was if we just started right into school and we kept them on a schedule. And, you know, I met other homeschooling friends. You know, we were in a small church. Some of the ladies that I knew when we first came to the church, we were either in the Navy and they moved on. I mean, I didn't have a whole lot of support even in my church with other people that were doing this at the same time. There were a few, not all of them really wanted to do it as much as I did. I really took it seriously because I felt like, you know, these are my kids and I want to train them up and I want to teach them. And I had had a fairly good education, even in public school, in the small schools that I went to in our small town. And I had some old teachers and I felt like I really got a good education. And so education was very important to me. It was important to my dad. I know he was always, you know, if we made a, I remember one time I made a B on my report card. He's like, I had made all A's and one B. And he said, what's this B doing there? I'm like, I made all A's. I only made one B. I mean, but he was very, he knew education was important. And so it was very important to me. And I don't know whether this is kind of one of those controversial things, but we didn't register at the time. And so I always had that pressure too, that if somebody ever came and knocked on my door and wanted to know what we were doing, if they tested my kids, I wanted them to be right where they needed to be. So it put some pressure on me to just make sure that everybody was doing what they were supposed to be doing. And we didn't, I know my daughter talked to another lady that had been homeschooled up in Michigan, and she said, yeah, her mom didn't let them go out of the house until 3 o'clock just because you didn't really want to call attention to yourself and you didn't want nosy neighbors. You know, we did have a neighbor that could have caused problems.
Yeah, it was a different world for you guys who were like the trailblazers in the early 80s. I've got a couple of friends who started in the 80s and the stories. I'm like, oh my goodness, it's so much better now.
You just wanted to be careful. You didn't want to cause, undue attention to yourself, you know?
Right.
I remember going to, like, if we had a dentist appointment or whatever, you know, sometimes that would be during the day and they would take books with them and they would just sit so quietly and read their books because they, you know, I wanted them just to, you know, just be a good example and be a good testimony.
Exactly.
And all that.
Yeah. Well, besides the homeschooling, what, you know, the challenges of managing all of that with 10 children, did you have any other special challenges that you had to face in your homemaking journey? And how did you work through those?
I was thinking of one thing that was a challenge, of course, was having a new child every, you know, they're all pretty much, average is 2 years apart. Some of them are a little bit closer. Some of them are a little bit farther away, but you know, eventually we were going to have to get a bigger place. So, I was mentioning Aunt Augusta, we needed a bigger place. And fortunately one of her, you know, inheritances was distributed. And so we were able to get a bigger, a really nice double wide that we could put on the property that we had. We had about 3/4 of an acre. So it gave enough room for the kids to, you know, play out in the backyard, and they had all kinds of pets and animals. We had turtles and rabbits and chickens and gerbils and hamsters. I mean, I let them have those animals. I think it teaches them good responsibility and all that. And so they, we were able to, finally, though, to put a double wide, and then we eventually got a room addition on the back too, that made it even bigger. So it was one of those, you know, really open double wide. So that was a big help. But I guess just having a new one coming all the time was probably the biggest challenge that we had, and learning how to, you know, deal with that. And then, you know, as they got older, you know, we would, because I would have chore charts and everything for them, and as they got older, they would, you know, take on more responsibilities. The younger ones would take on the little trash cans and the little things that they could do. And then also with homeschool, you have to have electives and all that too. So we always encourage the kids to, they learned how to sew, they learned how to crochet. The boys learned how to do woodworking, and I tried to have a garden. It never really went that well, but
it's hard to have a garden in that part of the country because there's so many bugs and it's so hot.
And the soil is not, the soil is real sandy. I've got one now that I've been working with, you know, and I enjoy that, but there was a pasture behind us where, the lady had cows and we could even get cow manure. We would try to mix that in, and we still couldn't get hardly anything to grow. So that was kind of a lost cause. But
it sounds like you, this is a nice segue into the relationships and hospitality section, because I always ask about kids and how you encourage them to participate in the homemaking with you. And so you're doing chore charts, you integrated it into their schoolwork by having them do electives and learn these practical skills. And what else did you do? Anything else to invite them into homemaking? Did they help with cooking at all?
They did some. We took walks and all that in the neighborhood and got to know our neighbors. And my mom had, she used to get the Taste of Home, those magazines and the cookbooks too. And she would pass them on to us. And I know one of the issues had a whole bunch of muffins, different types of muffins in it. And so they all looked so good that we, you know, me and the girls, we decided we were going to make all these different muffins. And then we made several plates to pass around to the different neighbors, because we had several older neighbors, elderly people in our neighborhood. And so they appreciated that so much. So we kind of made it a regular thing. And sometimes we take cookies, sometimes we take muffins, and but they loved it. They helped me with that. And some of the breakfast, you know, they learned how to cook, and they would help me with things, especially with the baking, but with other things too. They learned how to cook, and I was cooking all the time. I think back then, you know, we did a lot more. You didn't have the chicken that was already cut off the bone and all that back then. So you did a lot of boiling and a lot of baking. And so you would make just big pots of either chicken soup or chicken stew or chicken and rice or chicken and dumplings or chicken. so they saw that. And so, you know, that encouraged them to cook, because they all love to cook. Even my boys cook now. And I don't know, having home cooked meals, you know,
yes,
just got a taste of that. And it just, you know, I'm so proud of them that they do that, because that's kind of unusual. And nowadays, that's really a benefit, you know, to a family if the you know, the guy doesn't mind cooking too. So
absolutely.
And so I'm glad that we were able to, you know, teach them that. I one thing I forgot in there, and that I, you know, one of the practical ways that really has been a great benefit is that after lunch, we would always have a reading time. We would have an hour of reading time. And while the baby slept, or the younger one slept, then all of the children, they had to sit on the couch, and we would all sit together. We wouldn't like go back in our rooms. They would all sit on the couch, and they would read for an hour. And we had World Book Encyclopedia, so they could sit and look at a World Book Encyclopedia if they wanted to. But I tried to fill the home with books. We had I had all the reading. I found reading lists. You know, we had all the classics for the different ages. Another ones that we really liked was the it's published by Youth with a Mission, and they're Christian biographies, Christian heroes.
Yes, I love
then
those.
And now, I
yes,
think it's called.
Then and Now, Christian Heroes. Then and Now.
Yes.
Yeah, we read a lot of those.
Those are amazing. I enjoy reading them too. And
oh, I did too. Yeah,
they're so interesting, and it just. I think when you read the missionary stories, it just helps you to learn a lot about the Christian life, because you see these people that have given their lives to the Lord. They're overseas doing all this great work, and yet they had problems and difficulties too. You know, God, that's part of God's plan for us, is to go through troubles and trials, and they had some heart-wrenching things that would happen to them. And so it was just helped me in my Christian life, you know, and it was a good for my children too. I know Abigail, she does a podcast with another lady at our church, and some of the things she talks about are some of these missionaries, that because it made such an impression on her that they talk about some of these missionaries and Christians and hymn writers from the, you know, bygone days, and just their life stories. And so she really just loves history. And that was, I mean, you know, I think was, you know, part of our homeschooling. And just, you know, I just encourage anyone to have, you know, get good books in your home and give your, you know, have your children read them. And you almost have to set a time for them, because you get so busy that you just, you know, it's hard to do if you don't schedule it. But they all, you know, they became really good readers. And, you know, they all, I mean, some of my children went on to like War and Peace and all those kind of big books.
Wow. That's awesome. Well, I love the encouragement to fill your home with books. And I love what you did with them in the baking and taking that around to your neighbors. I mean, that's such a great way to show hospitality to your neighbors. Was there any other, what was maybe another way that you showed hospitality through your homemaking?
We would, we had some single guys in our church that were like older single guys, and we would have them over for Thanksgiving, I know. And when we eventually were able to get our double wide, we also got a big wooden country dining room table from Would You, and we, you know, we finished it ourselves and got it. And that, oh, that was one, you know, eventually we had to downsize, but that was like one of the most heart-wrenching things, was getting rid of my big table, because we had homeschool around it and we would have people over and we'd all sit around that big table. And I absolutely loved it. It was just amazing just to be able to have a home big enough to have everybody over. But we would have couples over from our church and different family members over. And then during Christmas and all that too, we would take cookies and all that to the neighbors and elderly people that we knew. One thing that when we moved, we did finally move to another church where they had a lot of ministries. By the time the last five were in school and then graduating, and they had a Bible college there too. As they started dating and all that, we would, you know, their boyfriend, girlfriend, they would come over for Sunday dinner, because Sunday dinner was a big thing for me too. My mom always had a Sunday dinner. And so we continued that. And so we would have them over for Sunday dinner. And as they got involved in some of the ministries and all that, because the bigger church that we went to, they had nursing home ministries, they had bus ministries, they had all these things for the kids to get involved in. And so on Sunday was a big day. So I would go home after church and just, you know, finish up the dinner and make everything. And then as they finished with the bus ministry, then they would come home and eat. And, you know, so that was a blessing to me too, that I was able to do that for them and get to know their, you know, potential mate and all that. And we had so many fun times around that table. I mean, it was just a lot of good memories there.
Oh, I'm sure. You know? And I'm sure that was hard to let go of that. And so I like to ask about transitions, because you're always transitioning in the seasons of homemaking. You're never, you know, stay for very long in one season, because things change as families grow and people move out. And what was the most difficult transition for you in your homemaking journey? Some people say the first baby, some people say the empty nest. What was it for you that was a difficult transition?
Well, I kind of mentioned it before, was that we moved from our smaller church and we went to a bigger church. And the church was about at least a half an hour away, and traffic would make it even more sometimes. They had a Christian school there, and we were able to, first we didn't think we could afford it. They worked out a way for me to help at the school and let the kids go to school. My Abigail was in 10th grade, all the way down to Eric was in first grade. So we had a big span in there, but it was just it was almost like 180 degree change from what we had been used to. Now, the kids loved it because they were with other kids their age. They had a really good youth group, really good, good solid church. And, but there was just so much busyness, because they had had sports, they had practices, they had fundraising, it was just total busyness. And so that was a big, transition and change for us. It changed my meal plans. It's like I really never recovered from that, as far as my coming up with a schedule, because everything was so different all the time. You know, we would just eat out more, you know. And then even with the chores and all that, it was just so hard to, we were just like, you're almost just like surviving, because there was just so much going on. But the kids loved it, and they learned how to sing. They learned how to, they put them in music groups. They had a very good music teacher that if they wanted to learn an instrument, she was just so enthusiastic about, you know, trying to help them. And I wanted them to learn as many, you know, things that they could learn if they wanted to, then I was all for it.
Well, what does homemaking look like for you in the season that you're in right now?
The one thing I think that's probably like where we are now is we had to, with my husband's health, he has Parkinson's. He's had it for 15 years now. As his health started declining. He was able to work for 10 years and then his health just got to where just the driving, and he fell at work one time, and you know, it was just time for him to retire. And we were in that mobile home, and it got, you know, increasingly hard for him. He started having to use a walker. It was hard for him to get down steps. So we were either going to have to just put a new walkway in, or, you know, we're going to have to sell the place. And so we talked to the children, and they, you know, it was an older mobile home, and they said they would rather help us get a house than try to just put another walkway and fix up that place, you know. And so that's what we did. We moved to a smaller, you know, but we had to downsize. So getting rid of, you know, things that had been a part of my life. I mean, we'd been in that house for, I can't even think how long, probably 30 something years we had been there. And so many memories, so many, you know, marks on the wall of where, how they had grown. Oh my, I mean, you just can't, you can't replace that. And just, but sometimes, you know, that's just part of life. You have to. I mean, I love this little house. I love my backyard. I got a nice place for a garden and all that. And it's a cute little backyard. It's all closed in, so the grandkids can come over, and got a swing set back there. I mean, it's nice and all that. So that's part of where we are now. And then with my husband's, sickness, you know, pretty much the doctors, all they can do is prescribe medicine, you know, give them a pill, let's give this pill to help with that pill, you know. But just researching it and trying to get other, you know, alternatives, there are some of it, diet can help with it. And doctors don't really tell you much about that. But there are some of the newer diets, even like the keto diet, and the paleo diet, and all those, you know, they are more healthy. And just from the research that I've done and reading, Parkinson's could be an inflammation of the brain. And, you know, some of the food that we eat causes inflammation. And so trying to just knock down some of that. And so I'm you know, back to just a new way of cooking.
Yeah, like experimenting in the kitchen.
Yes.
Yeah, to learn that.
If you've ever tried keto cooking, some of it is not...
It's not easy.
It's not easy, and it's all... They're coming out with a little bit more, but most of it, you have to do so much of it from scratch. It is really hard. Now, some of it you can do simply just by, okay, we're just going to have meat and vegetables, and we're going to cut out the, you know, the rice and the pasta and the breads and all that. And he did see some success with that. And I can tell the difference, you know, when we have a birthday party or whatever, we're going to eat, you know, he's going to eat ice cream and cake. And if, you know, he's going to have a hamburger and he's going to, you know, so I can kind of tell a difference when he eats more mm-hmm. of the, you know, your typical American food.
Inflammatory stuff. Yeah.
Yes. So.
Yeah. It's hard as homemakers because we want to like get these skills under our belt, and we think, okay, I've got this figured out, this whole cooking thing. And then, you know, for us, it was two of my kids were diagnosed with celiac disease about 10, 11, almost 11 years ago. And that was, oh my gosh, you know, have to learn everything new and change how we do everything. And that was, so let's see, I was over 20 years married at that point. And so I was like, I had hit my stride in the kitchen, you know?
Wow. Right.
And then having to just flip it upside down and change. But that's part of what we do. And that's part of our calling to care for our families.
Right. So, right.
Like I always say on the show, we need to just always be flexible. Always be flexible.
Yes, it's so true. And you know, I have two that have been diagnosed with it also. I don't know if it was from all that, you know, homemade bread that we made. I don't know. I mean,
no,
my Abigail kids,
it's in their genes.
Abigail, she kids about it because she's one of the ones that has it. She's just like, I guess I've got my, you know, my quota for gluten for the rest of my life because
that's right.
Because we did bake a lot of bread and we were always baking. Oh my goodness. So yes. I don't know, but we did, you know, so she's, you know, you do find some recipes that are, you know, fairly mm-hmm. good, but it's a trial and error. And sometimes you make one thing and you think, okay, this is pretty good. Then you make it again. You're like, this is not good. Why did I think it was good? So it's just a trial and error of just, you know, trying to find,
yes,
because, and especially yeah. with a man, they are very taste oriented, and it just, it,
right.
it kills me, you know, to, to not be able to fix for him the things that, you know, make it tasty and all that.
Those nice comfort foods, you know, it's hard. It's really hard.
It's very hard.
Let's shift a little bit. Since we're talking about food, this food often comes up in this next section about homemaking tasks. I'm going to ask you some questions about your fails and your wins and all that stuff. So if you can pick one, what would you say is one of your worst homemaking fails?
And I have had many. I think sometimes you just kind of like forget about. Because the one that comes to mind, though, and this is when we hadn't been married very long at all, but one of my husband's favorite breakfast foods, and this was part of his family, you know, tradition and all, it's called creamed eggs on toast. And you make a roux, you know, they were from Louisiana too. They make a roux, and then you put boiled eggs, you slice up boiled eggs and put it in there. And then you just serve it over toast. I mean, it's kind of like creamed tuna on toast, but it's creamed eggs on toast. And it was, you know, one of his favorite meals, and, you know, family recipe and all that. Well, when I started making it, somewhere in the process, instead of putting salt in it, I thought they said to put sugar in it. So the first time I made it, I just put a little bit of sugar, and it didn't, you know, it wasn't too noticeable. Something didn't seem right, but it didn't, you know. So I progressively, you know, the next, you know, two times I made it, I added put a little bit more sugar. Maybe it just needs more sugar. So by the time, you know, the last time I made it, it was like, he said, I don't know what's wrong with this, but I can't eat this. And so I'm like, oh no. And, you know, so, you know, then I found out that I was putting sugar in it instead of salt. So it makes a big difference in the taste. So that was one of my, you know, especially when you first get married, you know, you want to kind of impress your husband, and then you know, bomb his favorite breakfast. And then also one time I used to boil eggs a lot for, he would take them in his lunch. And one night I put some eggs to boil and I didn't set the timer and went to bed. And the next morning the house reeked of just rotten eggs. The eggs had exploded and bits of eggs were all over the kitchen. My pot was just black. I mean, I don't know how it didn't even catch on fire. I don't know.
That's what I'm thinking. It didn't catch on fire.
Nothing. Wow. It didn't catch on fire, but burnt my pot to a...
exploded
eggs.
They
just exploded all over the kitchen. So we had bits and, oh, it just smelled so bad. So
how long
that
did
was
it take
scary.
To get the smell out? How long until the smell lasted forever, probably?
I don't remember. I don't know what we did.
Terrible. Okay, that's probably the... one of the best. I left something on the stove and it burnt, because I've had several of those stories too. So
yeah,
exploded eggs. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's redeem your homemaking track record here. Why don't you tell me a memorable homemaking achievement?
Okay. This is one of my favorites, but, when I came, you know, after I retired from teaching also, I had a little bit more time on my hand. One of my daughters was getting ready to get married, and I had the idea to make a family recipe book, and I looked online, and there was one that you could just make copies of the recipes and slip them into the, you know, the sleeves. But another one was where you would actually write out the recipes. And so I was talking to one of my daughters about it, and she said, well, I think if you're going to make it like a family recipe book, you should write it out. And so, so that's what I did. I just started gathering the recipes that we all made, some from the past that they may not, you know, like the chicken and dumplings. I don't know if they'll make them that way. You know, cooking has changed so much, but they were still part of our family traditions and part of our family recipes. So I tried to just get a good, overview and a good mix of all of our favorite recipes, and gave that to her at her wedding shower with a whole bunch of spices because she's a big spice person. I have to follow recipes, but my girls can just like dump the spices in. I can't do that, but I have to follow a recipe. But I, you know, gave that to her for at her wedding shower, and she didn't know I was doing that, so she was absolutely floored. And I don't know how many times she told me, Mom, that is my favorite gift that I got. I mean, she loved it. And then, so then I had a little bit of catching up to do because a couple of my daughters had already been married, or I had some daughters-in-laws that I wanted to make for. So far I've made six of them, and there's probably, 120 recipes in there. I mean, it's a lot trying to handwrite.
That's
a
lot of writing.
It is a lot. And then trying to make sure you don't make mistakes and you don't, you know, forget anything in there.
Did you write them out on recipe cards or did you write them on like a piece of paper and put it in?
It was actually a spiral bound book. And it had different divisions. I think Susan Branch was the
yes,
and it was on Amazon.
So that is actually a lot of pressure because it's in the book. Like once you start writing it down, it's there.
Oh. And I found a couple mistakes that I had made where I either left something out or I had a wrong proportion or whatever.
So cool though. It's in your handwriting. I mean, that's what's great about it. Yeah.
And it had a place where you could write notes and, you know, little things in mm-hmm. there. And I would use one. Can I borrow this and, you know, until I can write the other one? I tried to do two it, you know, before I gave one away. I had tried to make two of them, but now I've given them all away and I've got two of my boys are dating now. I'm like, oh boy, I got two more I need to get working on. I don't know that the daughters-in-law get as much out of it as my daughters do, but I know my son, I mean, he likes to cook, so he's taken some of the recipes in there.
I'm sure they would still appreciate that. So
that was,
well, tell me what is, one of your homemaking hacks or tips that you find yourself using often?
And this was a hard one for me. I think I always I don't know. And maybe that was one that I probably should have gotten some help on. But one thing that, this is a simple thing, but somebody taught me that when you're making mashed potatoes, you put a little bit of mayonnaise in them. I don't know if everybody does that. I know my mom doesn't do that, but you put a little bit of mayonnaise in the mashed potatoes. I put some butter in there because I use my mixer and beat them up. And I put a little bit of butter in there, that soft butter. So that gets melted. And then I put a little bit of milk and then the mayonnaise in there just makes them really helps them stay creamy, I think. But somebody taught me that. And
maybe because it's, you know, mayonnaise is mostly oil.
Right.
And so maybe it just helps to keep it from drying out.
And getting stiff, maybe. It seems like
and getting stiff.
So well, I don't know.
I just put a little
scoop
teaspoon
in there.
I put a tablespoon
in there.
Okay.
Depending on how many potatoes you do, but you know, if I have like say 5 or 6 potatoes, I'll put just like a scoop, you know, a rounded tablespoon in there and just mix it all up in there together. Another thing that we used to do when the kids were little is we would have a 5-minute cleanup party and I would set the timer for 5 minutes and we'd maybe turn some music on and we'd say, just how much can we get done in 5 minutes? You know, and we just, and they loved it. They thought it was great fun. And we would just like run around the house trying to get as much done as we could. So that was kind of neat. And then on Sunday night, we would have a smorgasbord kind of, you know, because we'd have all these little bits of leftovers because I cooked, you know, almost every night. And so we would have all these little bits of leftovers and we would just get them all out and we'd heat it all up and everybody could just fix whatever they wanted to fix, you know, and then it was just, okay, now they're done. We're going to get rid of them. But that was, you know, that was a good way to get rid of some leftovers. And then I got reminded about this the other day. Somebody was talking about it, but it's kind of like if you're trying to decide whether to go ahead and do something or not, you know, and I get easily distracted. So I can always like, I should probably go do this, you know, and then I leave this over here. But a way to help you decide whether to do it or not is, can you do it in 2 minutes? You know, if I can get it done in 2 minutes, go ahead and do it. Just take care of it, you know. But if, you know, if it's going to take longer than that, then don't get started on it. I don't know if that was a help to
me. Those are great. No, those are great, Jan. You didn't need any help with that. Those are fantastic. Okay. How about a homemaking tool or product that you cannot live without?
Oh, I have several of those, I think. First of all, my KitchenAid mixer.
Oh, yes.
It's invaluable. We used to just have a hand mixer because KitchenAid mixers are, you know, they're kind of expensive. So we used to just have the hand mixer, you know, and I still remember my daughter having to mix, you know, some of the recipes would call for 5 minutes of mixing and she'd have to, you know, she would do it by hand, you know, my sweet daughter. But then we were able to get the KitchenAid mixer and that thing is a workhorse and they last. I mean, this one has, shouldn't say anything because it's lasted a long time and I hope it keeps lasting, but I love my KitchenAid mixer. And then recently I got a garlic press And I always just bought the garlic that was already minced up. And one of my sons told me, you need to use fresh garlic. You'll just be amazed at how much better it tastes. And so I did. I invested in a garlic press, and I really like that thing. It's a, you know, just smashes it all up for you. It makes it so much easier. And then I recently also got a, one of those, it's a cheese grater that you attach to your counter, and it's got a hand crank, and you just put the cheese in there and you crank it up, and it grates up the cheese, because they say grated cheese has been coated with something to make it where it won't stick together. So it's healthier if you just grate up your own cheese. And so that's been
a big help. It's cheaper too, because if you buy it in a block, it's less expensive than, because you're just paying for the convenience of them.
It is very convenient. And I used it a lot when the kids were little, but it's nice to have a little bit more time now where you can grate, because I had just forgotten how creamy regular cheese is compared to grated cheese.
And it's a big difference.
It's also good for grating up potatoes. And my husband used to make hash browns. He would grate up a couple potatoes and then just make a whole skillet full of them. And we would try to flip that big old thing. And I had kind of forgotten about it till when I bought this. It had a picture of the grated potato on there. I said, I totally forgot about hash browns. And so I made them several times since. So that's
it. Oh, those are great. Those are really, yes, I totally agree about the KitchenAid. Okay, tell me, what is your signature dish? What are you known for?
I have categories of this, I guess. If I'm going to take some food to somebody that's either had surgery or maybe there's been a, you know, death in the family, whatever, I make the Mississippi pot roast, and, that's a real good recipe. I've gotten very good feedback from people that just love it, you know? I used to make just a chuck roast with the dried onion soup mix and the cream of mushroom soup. And I thought that one was really good. But I was talking to my mom one day, and she said, well, try the Mississippi pot roast. And I had never tried it. And it is so good. I don't put as much butter as they call for. Sometimes they call for a stick of butter. That's a lot of butter. So I cut that down, but that's a good one. And then, if we go to showers, or birthday parties or something, I get asked to make coconut dip. And it's a real simple recipe, and it makes a good bit. It's Cool Whip, a 16-ounce Cool Whip, and a can of cream of coconut, and then a block of cream cheese. And you just, you know, you mix up your cream of coconut real good, and, you know, it's not coconut cream, it's cream of coconut. There's a difference. And then you mix that up. And then you make sure your cream cheese is soft, and then just mix the cream of coconut and the cream cheese first with a wire whisk, and just get it all beat up so they're just tiny little particles, you know, of the cream cheese in there. And then you fold in a 16-ounce Cool Whip. And people that don't even like coconut just love this dip. It's good on graham crackers, or it's good on strawberries and pineapple. But I bring that to showers. I bring that to ladies' game nights and stuff. And people are just, I've had people come up after I get there. They'll say, we were wondering if you were going to come and bring the coconut dip. And I'm like, so you don't care if I come? You're just waiting for my coconut dip. And they're like, well, yeah, no.
I think that qualifies as a signature dish. If people are coming up and saying that to you, then you're known for it.
We are known for our, we even had it at my daughter's wedding. She wanted me to make some coconut dip for the wedding. So it was just a nice tip with the fruit and all that. She had fruit.
Oh man, I'm getting hungry. It's we're doing this in the evening, which is unusual, and I'm ready for dinner.
at least for treats.
Well, okay. Yeah. Okay. We're going to talk a little bit about the art of home as we get near the end of our time here. And I would love to know how you see homemaking as an art, and where do you find beauty in homemaking?
Okay. This one was a little bit harder for me because I'm not very creative and not very decorative. I've always been kind of like a real practical, tomboyish kind of person. And, you know, I really feel like God prepared me for having a big family, having all these boys, because I was very tomboyish myself. I like getting out there and playing baseball and kickball and all that, you know, and being active and all. But I don't really have so much of the creative and the decorative side, which I think you need in a home. and, you know, balance everything out. I think the girls need, I think, you know, but my sister was very creative and she made several things for me that I was able to put up in the house. And, we'd go to thrift stores and, you know, hand-me-downs, people would give me stuff and I, you know, was so glad to have it. Cause we didn't always have a lot of money. I mean, my husband worked, he did the best he could and we just tried to, we just made do, you know, I mean, when you home cook meals and all that, you can save a lot of money. And plus homeschooling, we didn't have to have a lot of the clothes and all that, that they needed, you know? But we did have, you know, people would give us stuff and I would try to make the home look as nice as I could. But also, you know, I feel like there's a lot of beauty in a home cooked meal. I feel like there's a lot of beauty in a home, you know, a loaf of home baked bread and a pan of cinnamon rolls. I mean, chocolate chip cookies. I mean, they're beautiful. There's a lot of beauty in food. And, we also had good music in our home. We had, you know, we played Christian music and classical music and even got into a little Irish music, you know, and I think that kind of sets the atmosphere of your home. It just makes, makes it pleasant. And, my kids, you know, as they, you learned how to crochet and learn how to sew and, the boys with their woodworking and, you know, they made things that, I could put in the home. They were very good. They were very artistic as, you know, as far as drawing and all that. So if they made, you know, drawings and things like that, I would frame them and put them up in the house and, you know, just decorate our home with the things that they had done. And that, you know, it, you know, was a blessing to them to see their stuff, you know, portrayed. And then with their music also, you know, they learned how to play, one would play the flute, one would play the piano and they would, you know, play their Irish music or play their hymns. And just, you know, that added a lot of beauty to our home. So even though I wasn't very creative, you know, I still feel like we did, you know, we did the best we could and just made our home as pleasant and beautiful as we could. So I don't know, I guess
that's the art. I mean, that's it. That's what's so cool about it and why it's like art, because it's beautiful because it's an expression of your family culture, your right. unique family culture that God put together, and no other family culture is like it. And, you get to display true. His glory in a unique way. And especially with the way the things that your kids made and the music that they played. And that's what it's all about right there. So what's something about homemaking that you are thankful for?
Well, I'm thankful that I had the opportunity, to be a homemaker. And, you know, I'm thankful that we, you know, I was still in that time period where the, you know, I was able to stay at home and, be with my children. And I was glad when we homeschooled. And then I was also glad that they were able to go to a Christian school because that, you know, it worked out both ways and, it really balanced them out. I wish the older ones would have had the opportunity. It just wasn't, it didn't seem to be God's timing. But God has blessed them too. So, I was glad I got to spend time with them. We got to know each other. We had so much fun together. And even now, you know, when we all get together, it's like we have our own language because we, there are certain movies that we watched and certain things and memories. And I know two of the wives were talking at Christmas and they're like, yeah, they get together and I don't even know what they're talking about. They're just like going on in their own little world. And it's because we got to spend so much time together and we really had a good time together. And it was, so I'm thankful that I had that time with them. And, you know, the things that I've learned with cleaning, even this is kind of like a side note, I've been able to use those as I go to clean, for other people. And I mainly clean for older ladies and they just so much appreciate a clean house. And they appreciate me, you know, I try to do the best I can. I know how my mom would want her house to be clean. And so I try to take the same thing when I go and just do a good job for them. And they appreciate it so much. And so it's a blessing to them. And then that's a blessing to me, you know, that I can be a blessing to them. They, you know, they're older Christian ladies. They've served the Lord and they have health problems. They can't, you know, they can't clean their house like they used to be able to. So it's just a blessing to me to be able to, you know, to do that for them. Right. And,
right. Oh, I love that. That's really great. Well, we're going to end our time. And we're going to speak to the other women, to the younger women, because you've got experience and, they want to hear. They want to hear your wisdom. So what is something that you would say, a word of advice or encouragement to the younger homemakers coming behind you?
First thing would be, I would say pray about everything, big or small. There's a quote, and I couldn't find it, but it was something like, if it's big enough to be made into a care, then it's big enough to be made into a prayer. And just pray. God will help you find things. He will help you. Sometimes you get behind and you're like, Lord, I don't know what to do for dinner. I forgot to get something out or whatever, and just pray and ask him, open up the fridge and just see what God, something will come to your mind. You're like, oh, thank you, Lord. I didn't even think about that, so God is so good to us. Even driving, I live in a very busy, congested place, I pray about driving, finding a parking place. Lord, I've got to get in this other lane and there's cars everywhere, please help me get, pray about everything, ask for wisdom, of course, with your children and, I think I mentioned before, even your own mistakes, ask God to help you. Like, Lord, I messed up. I shouldn't have done this or I wasted time. Please work this out and help me to get back on track. And, God is so gracious and forgiving. And I would say, pray about your spouse, I naively thought when I got married, I'm going to change him. I'll change that about him. Well, he was 29 years old and he had been a bachelor living out on his own for a while. I wasn't changing anything. And even the things that I brought up sometimes, he would change maybe, a little bit, but they're just very, you just pray. All you do is pray about it. Mention it, talk about it. You do need to talk about things, but sometimes you just have to realize that you're probably not going to change them, too much. So ask God to work in their hearts and change them. And, you'll be amazed at what he can do a lot better than us nagging, You think if I say it often enough, he'll finally get the, hit, but that's just doesn't always happen. I pray, yield to the Holy Spirit every day, every day. Say, I just want to yield to you, Holy Spirit, and I want you to be able to use my life. I want to be a blessing to people. I want to be a blessing to my family, and just help me and show me and guide me where you want me to go. It makes the Christian life exciting when you just see how God puts somebody in your path that needs some help, or your child or your husband. Pray about asking God to use you. We had a man spoke at our church recently, and he said, he used the verse of Romans 12:1, that we present our bodies a living sacrifice. And he said, he was a military guy. And so he just kind of had he used it to show, you present yourself like, here I am, Lord, I'm ready for, what do you want me to do today? And that was just a good, reminder, good way to illustrate that. When you have your prayer time, I would say, make sure you keep a notepad beside you, because you're going to come up with all these things are going to run through your head. I need to go do that. I need to go do that.
Yes.
Write it down. Just write it down. Yep. And, because there are a lot of more things that you really do need to do. And I will forget. But keep a notepad next to you so you can just, you won't have to interrupt, because sometimes if you get interrupted, it's like you don't get to your prayer time, You're like, oh, I forgot to pray. I forgot I was interrupted or whatever. I would say find a good church, get involved, stay faithful. And we were in a not so great church situation at the beginning of our marriage and all. But I have to say that God used even that, and we still learned some things. Try to take the good out of things and don't just be negative about, find all the negative in it. Think about the good things that God taught you in that, and just let that be. God had a reason for you to be in that situation, and he can still teach you things, even though things are not, quite like you would want them to be. So just remember that God, he has a plan for you, and he is guiding you, and he'll guide you every step of the way if you'll ask him to, and just stay open to him and let him prepare you. I always wanted to be a teacher, but I never thought that could see myself like standing in front of a group of 30 kids, but I would like to tutor. And, you know, I just look back and think of how interesting that is that you know, God allowed me to tutor when I was in high school and all that. And then I became a homeschool teacher, which is very similar to tutoring. And then eventually I became a teacher in a Christian school. I had a smaller class, you know, maybe 15 or so. But he prepared me for that. You know, mm-hmm. he led me step by step. And, you know, he doesn't just push us out there. And
no,
usually he prepares us sometimes.
Yes,
you know.
He does. Well, Jan, this has really been a very good conversation. I've enjoyed so much getting to hear your story and your wisdom. And I know the audience is going to really appreciate it and get a lot out of it. So thank you for being here. Thank you for being so thoughtful about your answers and taking the time to prepare. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity, even though I, you know, was really nervous about it. I'm thankful and hope somebody can use something.
Yes.
My crazy life.
It's good. All right. Thank you for listening to this homemaker portrait of Jan Roush. I hope you have been encouraged and inspired to apply some of Jan's wisdom in your own homemaking. As I mentioned in the intro, I loved Jan's repeated theme of dependence upon and constant communication with the Lord through prayer. Her Titus II advice to pray about everything is the most important advice we could receive. God does care deeply about every detail of our lives, so let's not hold back. Let's take everything to Him in prayer, no matter how insignificant it may seem to us. 1 Thessalonians 5, 16-18 says, "Rejoice always, pray continually, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus." John Piper says that to pray continually or without ceasing means that a spirit of dependence should permeate all we do, that the very essence of prayer is dependence. And gotquestions.org explains this passage as consciously turning every worrisome, fearful, discouraging, or angry thought into a prayer, and then that prayer into thanksgiving. As we go through our day and face difficult situations, a troubled mind, or our own resistance to the tasks that God has appointed to us, our first response should be prayer. Don't feel like emptying the dishwasher? Ask God to motivate you towards faithfulness. Dealing with a grouchy toddler or teen? Ask God to give you a heart of compassion overflowing with love and patience. Running late for an appointment because you overslept after binging Netflix late into the night? Ask for forgiveness for neglecting rest and ask for the Lord to grant you favor in traffic and the integrity to apologize for being late without making excuses for yourself. Like Jan said, even when we have messed up, we can respond with a prayerful plea for God's help in making things right. In this week's newsletter, I will still be unpacking the pillar of rhythms and routines, focusing on rhythms of worship in the home. Go to theartofhomepodcast.com/subscribe to get on our mailing list for this free resource. We are closing in on the end of season 19 with only 2 more weeks to go. Just a heads up, I will be taking 3 weeks off between seasons this time as I prepare for and enjoy the wedding of my youngest son to his delightful bride-to-be. But I am making fun plans for the remaining seasons of 2024, including some big changes to our content schedule. I announced a few weeks ago that I would be adding a second regular episode to The Art of Home. It will be a short form, about 15 minutes or so long, and the goal will be to provide you with a little Monday motivation to kick off your week. That is just one of the changes coming to the podcast. I will share all of the big changes soon once I have everything ironed out. You may have noticed even less activity from me on social media lately. That is not by mistake. I'm pulling back quite a bit there, and possibly altogether in the future. I haven't decided yet. But you can still keep in touch by dropping me an email or voicemail over at theartofhomepodcast.com/contact. I absolutely love hearing from you all. I love to hear about your homemaking journey, how the podcast stories have encouraged you, and how I can be praying for you. If you have found value in this episode, please would you share it with a homemaking friend? I also welcome your ratings and reviews on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And if you are so moved, you can leave a tip in our virtual tip jar, Buy Me a Coffee. You can either leave a one-time tip or become a Titus II Women supporter for $5 a month. Titus II Women supporters receive access to an audio version of Homemaker Happy Mail. However you choose to support the show, I am so very grateful to have you partnering with me in this ministry. You can find out more about all the ways to support The Art of Home at our support page on the website, theartofhomepodcast.com/support. Well, that is all for this episode. I will be back next week with a brand new homemaker portrait. Until then, keep practicing your art of making a home.